I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
In the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 39, and on this episode, we go back to 2004 to take a look at the epic confrontation when Latino Heat became the WWE Champion. Wait. That would indicate that this actually took place in 1970. Excuse me, WWE Champion, though. Oh, you guys have to admit, WWE actually sounds pretty cool. Or maybe it's just me. Enough of my botching. I mean, I'm not Sin Cara, at least. Ooh, that's slow. The new Sin Cara is actually pretty good. Though he has botched pretty quite a bit, but that's besides the point. So yes, on this episode, we're going to take a look at No Way Out 2004 for the main review. First segment, though, we're going to talk a couple of pay-per-views, actually. You know, I can usually hear and talk about this, but, you know, I've actually, for the past couple of weeks, not quite talked about NXT Rival. And I've actually wanted to. And, of course, this past Sunday we had Fastlane. Of course, I had a lot of issues that happened. So I didn't watch Fastlane as it was happening. I was a little bit an hour behind. That's as far as I mean. And I did completely miss the last match because I'm a John Cena mark, and I was pissed. Apparently, we haven't learned anything from Philadelphia. At all. And I think both of these pay-per-views actually, in their own ways, showcase that. Let's just start off right at the bat. We're going to start off with NXT TakeOver Rival, and I'll go down the line. There was a dark match that we didn't get to see. It was Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy versus the VOD Villains, to which they won. And they would win again. I do enjoy the fact that Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, you know, the realest guys in the room from New York and New Jersey are, you know, getting a shot at the tag titles. I hope they win because, quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, Blake and Murphy are SWAFT soft. How you doing? Our first match I thought was really good. Hideo Itami versus Tyler Breeze. Really good match by both wrestlers. Again, they teased the GTS by Hideo. I remember talking with Maddie saying, like, when they pull that off, the eruption is going to be massive. But really a solid match. Then you had Baron Corbin versus Bold MC. I actually like this match in a way better than their first confrontation that they had at Arrival. Not at Arrival, but a couple weeks ago when they had in tournament, and they finally faced each other. And it was just like, it seemed too quick. And at least this one won't. Definitely, it showed how green Baron Corbin is. Which, again, you know, I think we all knew. You know, again, he's been having these 45-minute, basically, squash matches to build him up, which are great. And WWE is great at building up a superstar, especially on superstars that are supposed to be unstoppable like him. But definitely, you see how green he is. But I think the good thing that also showed here was that, yes, while he's still green in a lot of places, he's moving in the right direction. He's not ready for the main roster. He's not ready to move up by any means. But he is learning, he's taking stuff in, and he's obviously growing with every match. And as he starts to get longer matches, he's going to get better. So, the sky is the limit, I think, for Baron Corbin. He's definitely moving in the right direction, which I think is really the good thing that this match showcased. And I do like that what Bold MC showcased here. Then next was the tag team match between NXT, for the NXT Tag Team Championship. Blake and Murphy versus the Lucha Dragons, Kalisto and Sin Cara, to which Blake and Murphy won. And we already have heard that both Kalisto and Sin Cara have been in tag matches. I think there's one on main event. Unfortunately, I don't think we've gotten to see it, or we won't see it because of a conflict with British TV rights for main event, which WWE, hopefully soon, I hope they settle out so we can watch main event. Or at least watch that match, because apparently that was Kalisto's debut and he won there. And so he has been getting moved up to the main roster, which had been reported before. Blake and Murphy are good. They're in that middle ground. And if the last episode of NXT, I'm recording this on Wednesday night, the new episode is actually currently going on, and I'm going to be watching that a little bit later. But if you know the last episode is an indication there, they're going to be moved into heel roles, which I think will work for them. Because, again, that sort of, you know, that's almost that World's Greatest Tag Team vibe. Not that they're as good as the World's Greatest Tag Team by any means. Of course, we're going to be talking about them later in the show. But, you know, that whole, like, these very athletic guys. You just, you know, we're athletic and we'll win because we're good. And, you know, and I do, I like them. I like their personalities, and I think they're working very well. There were some botches in this match by both Sin Cara and Kalisto. More importantly, one minor one by Sin Cara that he worked it out. I really like the one by Kalisto, and here's why. I've always said you can either roll with a, you know, there are two different ways to handle botching. There's a bad way, and there's a good way. The bad way is to be completely stalled in the ring and like, well, we have to do the move again. And there's multiple things, actually bad things you can do. The best thing you can do is to flow with it and turn it into something to where, okay, it happened, and segue into this. Kalisto, when he botched, you know, Kalisto went for that amazing move that he hit before, and he kind of slipped, but he recovered and then turned it into some different springboard boot. And it felt organic, and it flowed naturally. And I sat there watching it like, Kalisto just did a textbook example of how you recover from a botch. And I think that's a really good sign. Because, you know, you're going to botch. Especially if you're a luchador and a high flyer. You're going to botch on the springboard moves and high flying moves. Because that's something that can happen. Sometimes it's a little, you know, it's a bit too humid and you slip on the ropes and everything. You know, that's, again, I keep making these Rey Mysterio comparisons. But that's the thing that Rey Mysterio was really good at, is Rey Mysterio, when he would botch, and he would botch occasionally. You know, every wrestler botches. But, you know, when he would botch, you know, he would organically flow through it and make it seem natural. And also that depends on, it also depended on the other wrestler to understand that and to go with it. I think a perfect example of that with Rey Mysterio is the WrestleMania 22 match when he slips off the corner post and goes into the wall and then immediately recovers and kicks Kurt Angle in the head. And Kurt Angle had the mindset to like try to reach for him, like, Like, well, he was going to counter anyways, and he slipped off, so he goes to reach for him, and then he gets kicked for his trouble, and it felt natural. So, it's a solid... I haven't really talked about the match. The match was solid, and we knew that the Lizard Dragons would lose. But I think the bigger thing that's showcased there is Kalisto and his ability to floor organically from a botch, which I think works well for him, because, again, I really think he will be their next Rey Mysterio, which is a good news, because they need somebody like Rey Mysterio right now. They really do. They need a small sort of luchador that has charisma, that Kalisto does. And, you know, I think he'll work very well. Next, we had the finals and the number one contendership for the NXT Championship match, Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville. The match is amazing. Just a wonderful match. A great back-and-forth contest. Second best match of the night, in my opinion. A great match. There were some things that kind of brought it down. One was Finn Balor's entrance. You know, it's the same face paint. It's the same thing that he had before. It's still wonderful to see, but it's... The shock value is gone. You know, and especially... And this may be also us as wrestling fans who have seen what he's done before. We expected maybe him to bring out something new. Just not the same thing. With the case of the face paint, it's something to where I would like to see him use it for special occasions and for it to be different than the one before. And you can't always be... You know, if he... At least have a rotating variance of it, you know, with different color schemes or something to make it seem different. Because it just was the same design and everything. There were slight differences, but not enough to really differentiate from our evolution. And so the shock value and all of that was down from that. We've seen this before. It's still amazing to look at. Still, I love it, and I'm very much glad that they're doing the face paint, by all means. But at the same point in time, I think they could have made it a little bit more different than what they did at our evolution. That being said, the match was amazing. Great match. Again, Finn Balor is really showcasing just how ready he is to be moved up to the main roster and how he'll be an immediate player. I can't wait to see him face the likes of Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan and other wrestlers, because I said it. Just as much as I've said Kalisto is next Rey Mysterio, I think Finn Balor is going to be the next Chris Jericho. I think he's solid enough on the mic and he'll get better. He's definitely got that sort of rock star charisma that Chris Jericho had. So, yeah, I'm very high on Finn Balor in that standpoint. Next, we have, by far, the match of the night. And, again, we keep saying we're surprised by this. It's not that we didn't think that the women wrestlers could wrestle. They have wrestled, and they'd be constantly, the second best match of the night. And always having great matches. But it's like... This is a case where the main event... The ending of the main event really hurt the main event, and we'll get to that in a second. Because this match has had a more satisfying... Both the main event and this match had a match where heels are winning, but it's just this one had a more satisfying finish, because it was a bit more clean. Fatal 4-Way match... Charlotte the champion defending against Bayley, Becky Lynch, and Sasha Banks. All four women were just absolutely spectacular. Charlotte looked super strong. I mean, I love the whole storyline. Everybody going after Charlotte because she's the champion, wanting to pin her to prove it. And again, it makes her look strong because it basically took three people to defeat her and take her championship. Sasha Banks couldn't do it by herself. It relied on, Bayley just did an amazing... No, that Bayley to Belly or... Belly to Bayley. It's one of the two. I keep forgetting. But those suplexes were amazing. They went off the top rope. Sasha Banks looked amazing. Becky Lynch looked great. And again, I love the finish of going for the submission, can't get Charlotte to submit, and then just rolls her up in a surprise move to get the win. I thought it worked very well. Both Charlotte and Sasha Banks, I think, are ready for the roster. And I keep saying that. I do also, though, have the mindset that maybe they should stay in NXT, at least until they figure out to get Divas matches more than goddamn 30 seconds. Hashtag give Divas a chance. Hashtag no, we don't mean, you know, quoting some stupid feminist from the goddamn, you know, Oscars, which means nothing because it's bullshit and stupid shit like that, which is why I don't watch the Oscars anymore. Well, actually, the stupid shit is the fact that the animation category doesn't get any respect. And the wrong animation always wins. It's always from... Again, I don't want to get into the Oscars. That's for a different show. But nonetheless, yeah. WWE needs to really improve. I mean, they had a decent time on the pay-per-view, but they need much more of a presence. And they have much longer matches. Again, reasons why we love Triple H. Because when he takes over, they'll be getting that, hopefully. Then you have Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, and this is just a war. It was a war, and it was everything it was advertised to be. I just have a problem with the ending, and I understand it. You know, I understand where they're going with it. I understand why they do it. My issue comes to two things. One is, I've just never liked this ending on a pay-per-view. I've never liked it. This is an ending for... to me, this is the type of ending for Raw. You know? So, yeah, I've never liked this type of ending on a pay-per-view. But my second thing is... This is a frustration. Wrestlers like Sami Zayn... And this goes with Daniel Bryan as well. I think this is where the frustration for... And why so many people... don't like the fact that Daniel Bryan's in the main event, is you have these wrestlers we liked. And there are these stories that WWE has... they've done with every other wrestler in the past. The whole build-up, you know, the journey. They become champion, and they have these... at the very least, they have these 3 to 4 month reigns. Now, not like 2 weeks. You know, as soon as Sami Zayn won the title, he's still right into this rivalry with... Kevin Owens doesn't wrestle much, and then pretty much on one of his first matches as champion, he loses it. And it's like, really, can we please have a sustained reign? I understand their storyline purposes, and yes, we'll cheer when he finally wins the title again, but I just want him to have a sustained reign. It's the same with Daniel Bryan. We want him to have a sustained reign. It's this type of stuff that leads to the belief, and I'm not saying that this isn't partially true, but the belief that, you know, WWE doesn't like little people. I say it's a belief because I'm not saying it isn't true. I'm not saying that there isn't people that just like the big guys. But definitely WWE has gone with little people. I just don't know what it is with Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn. I think it's more... Again, I think it goes back to... And we'll talk about this in a moment with Fastlane. I think that WWE has a problem pulling the trigger on storylines. I've said this over and over again. I think that is their biggest problem. They want to extend these storylines and make them these like 6 to 8, 9 month epics. And that's just too long for a storyline to go. Any storyline, regardless of what it is, I think has a 4-5 month tops premium on it to how long it can go. Again, we'll be talking about one of those in a moment. So, I didn't like the ending of the match. Top three matches were, in my mind, Owens versus Zayn, number 3. I mean, despite the ending, it was still a really good match. Barely, in my mind, edging out Hideo Itami and Tyler Breeze. Number 2 was Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville. And number 1 was definitely the Fatal 4-Way. with Sasha Banks winning. As for NXT Revival, this is the worst special NXT has put out to date. Now, that's it. Now, that, of course, you also have to put a couple things in context. One, they've only put out five, in my mind. And also, when I say the worst, even though this is the worst special they put out, it's still better than pretty much any pay-per-view WWE has done since at least Survivor Series. And most of the pay-per-views they did in 2014. Of course, all that's WWE booking fault, but that's besides the point. I mean, NXT's worst is still better than pretty much everybody else. Of course, that's also largely in part the fact that NXT Our Evolution set that bar so high. I mean, and I remember thinking, like, you know, I know I've been burned by saying, like, how can they go any higher? But this bar has been set so high. I mean, I've said it before, NXT Our Evolution is on that level of, like, ECW One Night Stand 2005. And pay-per-views that are another pay-per-views that are like on that level of like, oh my god, this is just, this is in that category for like the top 10 pay-per-views of all time, at the very least, if not top 5. So yeah, that's a very high bar, and I think it was impossible, especially this is beginning of the new year, and still very solid. Next, we have WWE Fastlane. You know, I thought for the most part it was kind of solid. There's a lot of problems with it. One, the first match, The Authority versus Ziggler, Rowans, and Ryback. I didn't like that there's a clean win for The Authority. And I just didn't like how they used Randy Orton. I would have liked to see Randy Orton come. Actually, what I would have loved to have seen, and I would have thought would have been better, would have been Randy Orton coming in the middle of the match and RKOing Rowans or somebody and costing them the match and then attacking afterwards. You know, it's just, I hate how weak they're trying to make Ziggler and Rowan and Ryback looking. It's not right, I think. I say I think, because it isn't. It's just, again, this goes back to how here's really the mindset. As wrestling fans who have watched WWE for long, we have certain expectations. And I guess our expectations are built upon what WWE did in the past. You know, WWE used to, you know, do certain storylines a certain way. And 99% of the time in the past, this match would have ended with Orton coming in during the match, costing the Authority the match, and then beating on them. I just wish they would have done it that way. I thought, again, we had the expectation. That, I think, would have been much better and had much more excitement. And again, that's what these things are, is that these refusal to pull the triggers and do things certain ways, it takes away excitement. You know, they talk about wanting to say that anything can happen on a pay-per-view. Well, that's a great way to show that anything will happen on a pay-per-view and you really want to check it out. Next, we had Goldust versus Stardust. I thought that was a very solid match, and I thought both did a great job. Then you had the tag team match, which I thought was really solid between Kid, Cesaro, and the Usos. Just a great match, and your new champions, Kid and Cesaro. That's going to be a good rivalry going into WrestleMania. You had Nikki Bella defeating Paige by the tights. Again, they got 5 minutes. Well, 5 minutes on a pay-per-view, you know, there are a lot of men. You know, again, the next match wasn't much longer. It only was like 2.5 minutes longer. which was Bad News Barrett, the Intercontinental Champion versus Dean Ambrose. Which, again, that was solid as well. And again, great storytelling by Ambrose and Barrett. And I'm really excited for the Intercontinental Championship. They almost hinted like there's three challengers for the title. And I would love to see like a Fatal 4-Way at WrestleMania. Ambrose, Ziggler, Truth, and Barrett for the title. That I think would be great. One thing to showcase here, though, that I think popped in my mind is, I think at these pay-per-views, they do far too many promos and advertising and just other stuff. Mind you, in between, I think, the Divas match and the Barrett match was the Sting-Triple H confrontation. Actually, no, it was before the Divas match. You had the Sting confrontation, which was really good, and basically indicating what we all knew was going to happen, Triple H versus Sting at WrestleMania. Like I said, the Barrett-Ambrose match was really solid. Then you had what I thought was the best segment of the night. Goddamn Bray Wyatt. I am so... I hope Triple H... I mean, Undertaker is in shape. I don't... You know... I don't believe that the WWE would put The Undertaker in any danger, especially after he went to the hospital last time. I'm sure they've talked it over many of times. But yeah, just like, oh my god, Wyatt. I am throwing my money, Wyatt versus Taker. I do want to sit here and say this. I do believe that I called this. Like, at SummerSlam of, what about Wyatt versus Undertaker? Hell, I think, going into last year's WrestleMania, I was saying that Wyatt versus Undertaker would be a better match than Lesnar versus Undertaker. And goddammit, Wyatt could benefit from getting Taker's streak much more than Lesnar could. I mean, can you imagine what would have happened had Wyatt defeated the streak? Oh my fucking god. That being said, I cannot wait for this match. I mean, these promos have been, oh my god, amazing. I think right now Bray Wyatt is running away with the promos and best on the mic for like any awards for that. Because god damn it, Bray Wyatt. I mean, an indication that it's going to be a casket match, which I think will be fun. Then you had Rusev versus John Cena. And once again, I had problems. Yes, I am a Cena mark. Hi, my name is Thomas Mattis. Actually, my other name is Thomas. I'm a John Cena mark Mattis. See, here's my problem. I like the match. I wish I didn't like the ending. It's just, there's so many other ways. And again, if they want to do a whole interference, you know, low blow thing, there's other ways they could have done it. But the submission victory, the whole I'm knocked out, which we've seen happen over and over and over and over again, they just keep spamming the same ending. You know, interference, low blow, or something that causes basically him to be knocked out, allows the kick to knock him out, and then gets the submission victory with the accolade. Oh, we've seen the span over and over and over and over and over. And at this point, you know, it worked for Jack Swagger at SummerSlam. Or basically the pay-per-view before where he would not quit. You could only do that ending once. If you keep doing that ending over and over of, well, they're been knocked out and they did not. Well, he did, but he didn't tap out. Doesn't matter. Still a submission victory. He passed out. And he doesn't look, John Cena doesn't look strong because of it. There's this long list of wrestlers. Now John Cena's being thrown into it. Wrestlers that are being made to look weak. I don't get why. Why are they trying to make these wrestlers look weak? I mean, not that I think they're intentionally doing it. I think the better answer is that they're thinking, oh, the audience will take this one way and not realizing that it's going to be taken another way because wrestling logic. They forget their wrestling logic and are overthinking how the audience will accept this. Again, it mind you just leads to the fact that this whole storyline about Rusev's streak should have been ended. I mean, this main event could have been awesome without the streak. The streak is just... The streak should have gone to Zack Swagger. You still could have then had him won the United States Champion and have him be this force. I mean, that's what you did with Umaga. I know Umaga was undefeated, but... Again, Umaga's a perfect example how you do that storyline. And mind you, with John Cena submitting, you're going to see a much better example of having John Cena submit in a match we'll be talking about in a couple minutes. I didn't see the Roman Reigns-Daniel Bryan match. I haven't seen it yet. I heard that it was really good. I kind of have to laugh. Because, you know, I said this, I believe, on this show before. I have no indication that, you know, that Roman Reigns wasn't going to win. I was pretty sure that Roman Reigns was going to win, and they were going to set that up. And that they were basically going to use this match to actually make Roman Reigns legitimate. Which I hear it did. I just think... And I wouldn't be surprised if WWE put these rumors out there on purpose. But whoever did, the rumor mills, I think, got everybody excited for the possibility of another triple threat. In one instance, I'm glad that they're not doing a triple threat. And you know what? Roman Reigns had a really good promo this past Monday with Paul Heyman. And, So, I'm not mad at it. I have to go back and watch the match. I know for a fact that it was probably pretty good because the brawl they had the previous Monday really got me excited for it. And, again, I was just really mad at the John Cena-Rusev match because I am a John Cena mark. And, again, it's the same, you know, I can't watch Rusev matches anymore because they pissed me the fuck off. Anyways, we are 30 minutes in, so I think it's proper time to get into the No Way Out pay-per-view, don't you think? So, ladies and gentlemen, No Way Out 2004 took place on February 15th, 2004, with an attendance of 11,000 at the Cow Palace in Daly City, San Francisco, California. This is a SmackDown brand pay-per-view. The theme song is Crossing Borders by Rey Mysterio with the tagline, Wanted for Lying, Cheating, and Stealing. Your commentators are Michael Cole and Taz. Ring announcer Tony Chimo, and of course, backstage interview Josh Matthews. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into No Way Out 2004.
Viva la raza!
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
We lie, we cheat, we steal. We lie, we cheat, we steal.
Mamacita, we got that passion that's lasting long. Los mujeres fall in love with that Latin charm. One woman isn't enough, amigo. Siempre cogiendo más mujeres porque somos Latino. And we tougher than tough, calling your bluff, cuz.
We lie, we cheat, we steal. We lie, we cheat, we steal.
We don't care if you like us. Everybody wants to fight us. Hey, oye lo claro, we ain't the ones you wanna meet. Hay nada más caliente, we're too hot for you. Latino heat, chavito heat.
And welcome back, and let's get into the way out 2004. Of course, first we have to mention the dark match, and this is a Sunday night match, where Tajiri, Akito, and Sakura defeated Billy Kidman, Paul London, and Ultimo Dragon in a six-man tag match, which I would have loved to see. Yeah. Got a couple, you know, for us to talk about New Japan recently, you got a couple of New Japan stars right there, and Tajiri, Akito, Sakura, and of course, Ultimo Dragon. People who made their name big over there in the past. Our first match of the evening is a intergender 2-1-3 handicap match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. The champions Rikishi and Scotty Two Hotty versus the Basham brothers of Doug and Danny Basham with Shaniqua. You know what? I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was a fun match. I thought it was a great opening match, especially the ending. quite a much of a botch there, where the Sonequa was placed for the bonsai drop by Rikishi. It's kind of funny to see the ref have to actually shove her arms inside the ring so he can count the 1, 2, 3. It's like, oh, come on, Rikishi. You've been experienced enough that you should have done that. Again, the difference between this era and today's era. You know, you could have women in an intergender match and see them get squashed by a 400-pound ass. And I don't mean ass in a bad way. I mean because that ass. Scotty Tuhati was awesome, I thought. I thought he did a great job, and it was a great opening match. Not the best match in the world, but, you know, it was a good opener, and it got the people excited. And then speaking of intergender, god damn it, our next match, Jamie Noble versus Nydia in a single match where Jamie Noble is blindfolded. Now, again, you'd also have to understand the story, which, again, they did a great job explaining in the pay-per-view, the whole that Nydia had been blinded by Tajiri's mist and that Jamie Noble had taken advantage of her. Of course, this also on the content of Jamie Noble, who became Jamie Noble's redneck trailer trash character, who had become rich off inheritance, and now, you know, all of his inheritance is suspended, or not suspended, but had been spent. And now he's angry, and he wants all his stuff back, and he's kicking it into the curb, and he's taking advantage of her. And, yeah. And then Nydia could see again, and it led to, I think, I kind of forgot about that little moment on SmackDown where Nydia puts the like, $500 mink coat in the wood chipper. I do remember laughing at it, though. And I laughed at it here, because it's pretty funny. Again, you have a woman facing a man, because we could do that in this day and age. You know, I find it funny, you know, again, this is a bit of political talk, so if you don't like political comments, go just jump ahead about 30 seconds, but I find it interesting that feminists like to constantly talk about Power Girl's boobs and her cleavage, but they don't want to talk about enough about how the divas don't get put in more intergender matches with men. You know. By the way, that's why I have a hard time believing CM Punk's thing about Vince McMahon saying, like, you know, they let women fight in the UFC? Because I'm like, why would he say that when he's done this? I mean, I know Jamie Noble's blindfolded, but damn it! This! Oh, by the way, this is a very fairly entertaining match, and it's only 4 minutes and 23 seconds. Yeah. And the tag team match is only 8 minutes and 60 seconds. So, again, you know, for all the talk like, oh, they've been only given 5 minutes. Well, you can do a lot in 5 minutes. This is where I'll defend the WWE. It's about the amount of content that you put in. And, for instance, at Fastlane, I thought Paige and Nikki did put in a lot of content, or some good content. I just think they should be doing more and have a much more faster pace. I think that's one of the big problems with the Divas division, is that they should be a bit more faster in their wrestling, and they're not. But this was a solid, fun match again. And great heel maneuver by Jamie Noble, peeking when the referee wasn't looking, and able to get the win, and just an absolute heel with, you know, the Dragon Sleeper. Could have just pinned her, but no, he had to make her submit. So again, I thought it did a great job of showcasing Jamie Noble as a real heel. Our next match is the world's greatest tag team of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas versus the APA of Bradshaw and Farouk. Another very solid match. Really interesting match to see, because, again, this goes back into the whole storyline thing. Because this is one of the matches, I believe, that facilitated Bradshaw breaking up with Farouk. And going on to become John Bradshaw Layfield. around. Of course, they broke up, and Farouk would announce his semi-retirement. Later on, John Bradshaw Layfield would become, or Bradshaw would become John Bradshaw Layfield, and then it would lead to him a couple months challenging Eddie Guerrero for the title and winning. So again, this is a match that really facilitated that whole thing. Being defeated by the world's greatest tag team. And again, done in a very solid match. Now, before our next match, if I look up to it... Had to check. We have a little segment. Now, there's this whole storyline that Stone Cold had given Goldberg a ticket to No Way Out. Of course, Goldberg had been eliminated due to Brock from the Royal Rumble due to Brock Lesnar's interference in an F5. That allowed him to be eliminated by, if I remember right, by Batista. So Stone Cold gives him a ticket and says, "Don't do anything I wouldn't do," which in other words, yeah, go raise hell. Of course, this is part of that whole storyline, that leads up to WrestleMania 20, Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. The excitement and the adrenaline and the electricity in the air when Goldberg enters the arena. It's like, this is why say what you want about his wrestling, but he just has this charisma that just like oozes awesome, that when he immediately enters an arena, it's like you feel it. And you could feel it sitting at home watching it too. So you have this segment to where Paul Heyman comes out and talks to him, then Brock Lesnar comes out and basically says, "Chicken shit, come out and face me." Like, and Paul's like, "No, no," and like Goldberg's like, "All right, motherfucker, get to the ring." And Lesnar trying to intimidate Goldberg like this, "I'm gonna take off my shirt and show my pecs." It's like, "All right, motherfucker." By the way, before you go any further, love that Goldberg has a Santa Slays shirt on. I am probably one of the few people who actually enjoyed that movie. It's one of the movies that, to me, so bad it's good. In particular, that opening scene. God damn it, Goldberg is a great heel. There's a reason why that one episode of Law & Order SVU is one of my favorite, because Goldberg's in it, too. Where he plays a... not a con, but where he plays a perp who's like hooked up on PCV. Anyways, like he rips his shirt. It's like, "Yeah, you think you're intimidating with pecs? Look at these guns, motherfucker." And then Lesnar cheap shots him, which leads to Goldberg hitting a spear. And then hitting the jackhammer on him. And then security comes out and arrests him. And I'm sure we'll never see Goldberg again at this pay-per-view. a little atop the fourth wall joke there. Hey there, Likara. So our next match is Hardcore Holly versus Rhino. Again, a nice solid 10-minute match. Both wrestlers looked really strong in it. It's classic SmackDown of this era, of the Ruthless Aggression era. This would be either a great main event or like the match right before the main event. But it'd be one of those big matches you usually see on SmackDown. It's got a great position here though on the pay-per-view. It's a solid match to fill in the pay-per-view. These two wrestlers who were having beef again with each other. They told a sort of a story of, mind you, again, Hardcore Holly, who had a beef with Brock Lesnar, comes out right as Lesnar's trying to recover and like chases him from the ring, and then out comes Rhino and they have a great match. The Alabama Slam out of nowhere, I just think that the one thing that hurts the match is that the setup for the Alabama Slam, it just really came out of nowhere. And the Alabama Slam is not a, it is a move that comes out of nowhere, but there's a certain setup for it. And it just felt a bit too sudden. The Alabama Slam needs to feel sudden, but not too sudden, if that makes any sense. but still a solid match between Hardcore Holly and Rhino, who, by the way, for those who don't know, is back in the WWE. NXT, they kind of hinted him and Finn Balor, which I'm going, yes, 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 yes. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. But solid match. Now we have our final three matches. Our first is Chavo Guerrero with Chavo Classic versus the WWE Cruiserweight Champion Rey Mysterio with Jorge Pazes. Let me look up his... He's a boxer, I know that. Mexican boxer, former WBO and IBF featherweight champion. Apparently he's also been a circus performer. But yeah, he was a big boxer at the time, big featherweight boxer from Mexico. And there were a lot of good boxers, and still are a lot of good boxers from Mexico. And you gotta understand, even though I had to look up his facts, I am a big boxing fan. And by the way, Mayweather, Pacquiao, May 5th, I will be there. Or probably not, but I'm interested in it. If I have a friend who's going to be watching, I'm going to be going. I'm not willing to buy it, but I am very interested in it. But yeah, I like boxing more than UFC because boxing is actual real fighting as opposed to the fake fighting that UFC tries to pretend that it is. Because for those who don't know, UFC is professional wrestling. Anyways, this is actually the second longest match of the night, and just another classic between Rey Mysterio and Chavo Guerrero. Back and forth contest. Just, you want to see a textbook example of really what makes the Cruiserweight division so great. Here's a textbook example. The classic, you know, just amazing high flyer Rey Mysterio versus the great Mac Tactician that Chavo Guerrero is. A spectacular move by Chavo in the middle of a match where that turned it in his favor for pretty much a while when he hits Rey Mysterio with this like gut buster, a single knee gut buster off the top rope. Just an amazing maneuver. And he had all Rey's great maneuvers, hurricane runs and everything. And then, of course, I do enjoy, again, Chavo Guerrero being the heel that he is, you know, using Chavo Classic to get the win. Yeah, Chavo Classic should have been eliminated earlier. There's a whole thing where Chavo Classic was in Chavo's corner and Jorge Pazes was in Mysterio's corner. Classic gets involved and then Pazes hits him, but he's the one that gets caught, and so he's the one that gets it in the back, and Classic's allowed to remain, which allows Rey Mysterio, him to get involved at some point and knock Rey Mysterio off. I believe it's off the top rope is what happens. I have to go back and remember. I've kind of forgotten. I apologize. But Chavo gets the win, and he is your new WWE Cruiserweight Champion. But yeah, just a solid match. Just a textbook example of what a great Cruiserweight match is supposed to be. And that's the thing about all three of these matches. All three of these matches had this great sort of like this, I hate to use the term heavyweight, but it's like the big match feel to it. And that's what made all three of them great. Our next match is a triple threat match to determine the number one contender for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 20. Kurt Angle versus Big Show versus John Cena. I love this match. All three men looked very strong. All three men looked great. You would think, as a John Cena mark, and yes I am, that I would be mad that basically the match ends with John Cena tapping out. Now, the pure John Cena mark in me would like to mention that it basically took two motherfuckers to constantly focus on his motherfucking legs to make him weak enough to actually tap out. And the fact that this was young John Cena and he was still growing. That is the complete mark. But as the wrestling purist and somebody, again, who loves the way the stories are built, that is also why I also like it. I loved how they built it. You know, there's the whole storyline. For all those who say John Cena doesn't sell, John Cena sold how injured his knee was pretty well. And again, he did have that Superman feel to it there, but I thought he did a really good job of selling it, at the very least, enough to where it was believable. In particular, when, he gets knocked off the ring and he gets into the barricade and he, immediately holds his knee, he did a great job there. And again, that whole focus that was constantly by both Big Show and Kurt Angle on his knee. That was definitely his weak link in his arm. The chink in his armor, and yeah, again, for the match, for him to have to submit with that much damage on his knee by both Big Show and Kurt Angle, and mind you, both all around, the entire match was great, and it's just one of the great moments of the match where John Cena is able to pick up an FU Big Show. Just whenever he does it to Big Show, it's always an amazing feat of strength. And that was just amazing. Even to do that with a bad knee as he was selling it was just great. And again, that's where you had that whole Superman Cena idea. But I think it works here. And it's just, it was a great, solid match. The match went apparently 12 minutes, 18 seconds. I actually thought it was shorter. I thought it was under 10 minutes. But again, that's the whole thing about the amount of content that you put in and the speed of the match that you do. It can make a match that's 15 minutes seem like it was only 10 minutes. Because there's so much content, and you have trouble rationalizing the time in that. Last but not least, we have our main event. Oh my god, I love this match. This was just a great, great match. Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar, the current WWE champion for the WWE Championship. This match had three distinct periods of it, which, that's always a good sign, I think, for any match, to where you have a long sort of heavyweight contest. Mind you, 30 minutes for a match, so, 10-minute segments if you think about it. But you had, the opening salvo for the match, in which Lesnar just pretty much dominated, and it's like, this is, again, that whole big fight feel, that makes it feel like a real fight. You have this fight that goes a pretty long time, and you can actually segregate it into different periods of the match, with the first one being, Lesnar dominating and Eddie having to survive Lesnar's domination until he can find an opening. And then you have the mistake done by Lesnar and Eddie, and the fact that it showcased Eddie hanging with Brock Lesnar, who just dominated everybody. People like The Big Show and Kurt Angle and others. And so he hangs with Lesnar, and then Lesnar makes a mistake, and Eddie takes advantage of it and just grounds Brock, and just great focus on the leg, setting up in submission, step over toe holds, the lasso from El Paso, and up, again, just ground and pound. And then you have that third period where it's like the period where we bring it home. And everything's set up, and that's become more even. It's back and forth between Lesnar and Guerrero. Guerrero hits the Three Amigos, goes for a Fox and misses, and then Lesnar goes for the F5, knocks. Now, as soon as he, of course, mind you, I knew this happened before, but if I'd been watching this when it happened, as soon as he hit the referee with that F5, I would have knew what was coming. And everybody knew it was coming, too. And then Lesnar gets it. And I love the fact that they make you wait for it. They don't do it immediately. Lesnar just, launches around, goes, gets the title, and it's like, I'm going to hit him with the title. And he gets the title, and you hear that cheer. Here comes Goldberg. And then, spear! 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 And it's like, oh, and you could feel it, and you could feel the excitement in the crowd, because again, this crowd was absolutely pro-Eddie. And then, I didn't talk about it much, but again, also the storyline going into this match of I'm unbeatable, you can't beat me, and Eddie Guerrero as this underdog, former addict, you're an addict, you can't defeat me, you're always going to be an addict, but I'm going to, Eddie Guerrero going I'm going to prove that the only thing I'm an addict of is the high of being WWE champion. Because I have beaten my demons. And it was a big part of his story. And it's what made him that story so great was it was all true. And so you felt like, oh, yes, Eddie's going to win, even though I already know what the ending is. Because it's 10 years later, over 10 years later. And it's still like, oh, Eddie's going to win. Eddie's going to win. One, two, oh, kick out. And just, again, even though it's over 10 years later, you're still excited for it. And then you have the belt, and then you have this classic Eddie, like, boom, hits Lesnar with the belt, eliminates the belt, goes up for the frog splash. One, two, three, and your new WWE champion, Eddie Guerrero. Oh my god. You know, when you hear Tony Schiavone going, you're no WWE champion. And Eddie Guerrero, like, just, like, jumps into the crowd. And he's got to be, like, pulled out by security. And it's like, wow. It's just like, that crowd went nuts. And it was amazing. This is one of those great classics of WWE. I think if WWE ever, like, did, like, the top 10 classic matches, definitely if they did the top 20, it would be in there. I would dare say even the top 15. And I'm saying that at least for the top 10, Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar at least has to be in the conversation for, like, top 10 most classic WWE matches. And certainly in the conversation for one of its best matches. Just a great storyline, a great contest, and a big fight feel. And again, just all like the build up throughout the pay per view, the booking was great, the build up for it, and just worked perfectly. And that whole build up, and the build up of the storyline as well, you know. This is a perfect example of why I thought the SmackDown brand was the best brand during the brand extension. Because, yeah, you had the heavyweights and all that on Raw, and Raw was exciting in its own way. But at the end of the day, if you were a wrestling fan, you went to SmackDown, and this was why. And just, this was amazing. A five-star match, without a doubt. So, that's it for No Way Out. Time to go over best matches, best moments. We'll start off with best moments. My favorite moments are definitely moment number three, John Cena FUing the Big Show. Moment number two would be the Gutbuster slash back. They say backbreaker, but I'm pretty sure it was a Gutbuster. Because that's the one I know that he does from the top rope. A single where he jumps off, like, in a fireman's carry position and jumps off the top rope, or at least the second row, and, like, comes down in air, brings him over, and, like, cross the knee in a gutbuster. But that maneuver by Chavo was really amazing. And, of course, number one has to be Eddie Guerrero winning the championship. That frog splash. And the crowd erupting. And as for the top three matches, kind of actually goes in that same way order as well as far as what the matches are concerned. Number three is the triple threat. Just a great solid match. Great energy. Great pace between all three competitors. Everybody was look strong. And I mean, they really made John Cena look strong, even though he tapped out. And again, this is the difference I talk about when I say, here's the difference between this match. We have two great examples of John Cena basically submitting. But here, in this match, he's made to look strong, even though he actually does tap out. And then you have the one where he passes out, but he looks made to look weak. And, of course, that's because they overplayed that ending so many times over the past year with Rusev. And just, like, really? And it really is that really where here, John Cena was made to look strong. Like, no, don't. Oh, damn it, John. But you know what? When you think about it, he's made to look strong. So, number three, the triple threat match of Kurt Angle, Big Show, and Triple H. John Cena, excuse me. I hope I haven't been saying Triple H the entire time. Number two, Rey Mysterio, Chavo Guerrero, WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Just wonderful. But number one, without a doubt, there is no contest. Eddie Guerrero, Brock Lesnar, WWE Championship. This pay-per-view is worth watching just for that match alone. But the fact of the matter is, this pay-per-view has many great matches. The final three matches are all wonderful to watch. You have a solid undercard to help build the excitement towards the big three matches. And like I said, the big three matches have a great big fight feel and everything. And the Cow Palace, you know, I didn't talk much about the set. The set is amazing. A whole chain and sort of Alcatraz feel to it. I think that's included in the way like the entrance was, which felt very weird. Kind of off-center, but that, I think, lent itself to the amazing feel of the pay-per-view and everything. And for a pay-per-view that really its purpose is to build towards WrestleMania, this is probably one of the best versions of No Way Out you will ever see. You know, yes, you had No Way Out where you had this great match between Foley and Triple H in a Hell in a Cell. That's a great match. But if you look at that pay-per-view, it was really obvious that a lot of things were build up. The thing that makes this pay-per-view so great is that a lot of this is build up. At the same point in time, it didn't feel like build up. This feels like, you know, this is our pay-per-view and we're gonna like try to be the best pay-per-view we can and try to put WrestleMania behind the eight ball. Because again, and it's just, you would think you wouldn't want to do that, but that's really how it should be done, because you want to set the bar high for WrestleMania. Because WrestleMania, it should be easy for them to reach that bar. So, for me, 5 out of 5 for this pay-per-view. Just a great pay-per-view. Like I said, 2003, 2004, I thought had a lot. You know, some of the best pay-per-views WWE, I think, put on would be during this time period. So 5 out of 5 for me. Just a great pay-per-view, worth a watch. Maybe I'd say I want to bring it down to a 4.5, but really just the amazingness of Eddie Guerrero raises it from a 4.5, with its one downfall being that undercard, being solid, not spectacular, but very solid, which makes it a 4.5, but that Eddie Guerrero-Lesnar match brings it to a 5 out of 5. It's just that damn good. You could say that it was a 4.5, but Eddie Guerrero stole the 5.5 because he lies, he cheat, he steal. Viva la raza! So, that is it for this episode of CMJew's Wrestling Reviews. If you enjoyed this episode and had any comments about it or about any other episode, remember there's some ways to contact the show. One, you could leave us a comment by emailing us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Stitcher, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. Search for the Absolution Network, like us, listen to us there, and leave us comments there. And you can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to facebook.com. Search, mind you, for The Absolution Network. We are the ones with the A and N in the circle. Like us and leave us comments there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, while you're at any other 132 Productions, or while you're at the Absolution Network, make sure you check out all our other 132 Productions content. I'm sorry, I had a little liquid go down the road tube. But make sure you check out all our stuff. That, of course, includes my Tom's Prerogative and Tom's Top 10s and the Intergalactic Graphic Review that I do with my good friend Edwin. Also, make sure you check out Shin Tiger Curl's Wrestling reviews and anime reviews and video game reviews. And then, of course, you have John Ramos and his Toku and voice acting videos and everything like that that are just great. That, of course, includes Tohoku Apocalypse and the Spider-Man thing, Japanese Spider-Man reviews as well. And, of course, many others. Of course, the Anicast, or the Relic, and the Otaku Momentum, and many more. All that on the Absolution Network. And then, of course, there's our other sites, which, of course, includes Comic Book Crazy, with the Comic Book Crazy podcast. That's the podcast that would later become the Intergalactic Graphic Review. Hexcast, and, of course, Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Check that stuff out. And then, of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Matty J, TWK, and the WrestleCast over at Reviewtopia. RVTN. I always want to call it Reviewtopia. I don't know why. And I apologize, guys. Again, I guess that's how far back I go. But RVTEntertainment.com. Michael Bailey and Fuse the Long Box, along with Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. I also want to point out, I'll point out when I get to 2-2 Freaks, but my good friend Spidey Dude in the Clone Sucker Chronicles, Critical Hit by Steven Schleicher, and like has made mention, Skateboard under the 2-2 Freaks podcasting network, and the one that I'm really excited for on that network, if you don't know, is the Tales from the JSA proudly presents Crisis on Infinity Earths, featuring Michael Bailey and Scott Gardner. First episode's out. It's amazing. Crisis on Infinity Earths is one of those books that, if you're into comic books, it's a must-read, I think. So check that stuff out. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next week is March. That means it's only time for one pay-per-view. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the road to WrestleMania. And next week, we review a WrestleMania I've been wanting to review for the longest time. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to go back to what may be the WrestleMania that set the precedent for what WrestleMania is, as we take a look at the first great big WrestleMania main event. And I do mean big, because ladies and gentlemen, we are going to go back to the time that Hulk Hogan faced Andre the Giant in the Silver Dome of over 90,000 people. Yes, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we review WrestleMania 3. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. See? M. Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will rip a hole in the ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You got to give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them want to live that fast life, but you're dreaming.